Hi, my name is Valerie Lee, and I'm a senior lawyer of Watson Farley & Williams, a maritime law firm. And we have on our panel today some of the biggest names in global shipping banking. According to the clock, I have 34 minutes. I'm not going to stop this panel until we've got everything that we want out of them. So please feel free to go and grab a coffee if you like. We'll try to keep it short. So just by way of introduction, we have Mr. Perry Van Echtelt from ABN AMRO, Head of Transportation Asia, Chris Conway, Managing Director and Global Head of Shipping and Offshore Export Agency Finance from Citibank. We have Peter Illingworth from Deutsche Bank, Managing Director. Also Oliver Fart from NordLV. And finally, Mr. Ang Tun Beng from DVB. Our topic today is global shipping banks and the availability of finance for Chinese shipping. As you can see, these are huge names in global shipping, and I just wanted to take the opportunity to ask two questions that I get asked by other banks, borrowers, and also leasing companies. The two questions that we're frequently asked is, number one, which banks are still lending? And two, what kind of transactions are actually being done in the current market by these global banks? So just taking this forum, we're going to split it into two sections. We're going to have a section, firstly, on the international outlook. And perhaps we can just explore that first, and then we will go into specifically how it applies in the Chinese market as well. So for the first question, what I had was maybe we could have some observations from our panel on how they see what is the current state of international banks in the current market. And perhaps I could get Peter to start with first on what you see as the current state of international banks.
Well, I think maybe to set the context for this, you know, maybe I'll just explain where we were as we went into the shipping crisis and the global financial crisis. I mean, that at that time, the market was dominated by these European and US banks. So the primary source of finance was the Germans, the UK banks, the Scandinavian banks, and the US banks. That's how we started. Those banks probably divided in broadly. We're on a panel, so we're going to generalize. They're probably divided broadly into two main major categories. The specialized asset finance banks, who primarily dealt in debt. They had a lot of clients, so typically they might have 300 plus clients each. So highly fragmented, moving into the smaller borrowers as well as the larger corporates. That was a typical model in Germany, where there were some of the biggest lenders were, and they had a particular problem in that they had the KG market, and I'll leave that Oliver maybe can refer to that later. They had a particular problem with the KG market, which was non-recourse finance, lots of little deals, and focused on the container shipping sector. Then you had the universal banks, which were not exclusively focused on, or not primarily focused on, debt financing. And where they did debt financing, they were doing a lot of corporate deals. They perhaps had, against 300 plus clients for the asset finance banks, they had 50 to 100 banks. And these banks were doing, in addition to commercial debt, they were doing export credits. They were doing more general corporate type ancillary services. They were doing corporate finance investment banking services. Now, what has happened is that the banks who were focused on asset finance were the first to feel the pain. So those are the banks who felt the pain first. The universal banks were feeling pretty much fine for about 4 or 5 years, and then they too started to feel the pain from nine plus years of shipping crisis. Their business model is still continuing. So there's generally been a flight to quality. And the business today has moved away from the smaller clients with the asset focused deals towards more corporate business, or towards business which has got some sort of credit enhancement, and that is why there's been a lot of focus in the last few years on export credit deals, where you have either a double credit or a triple credit. Now, the double credit would be the deal where you have a borrower comes to you and he says, well, I've got a deal which is a ship ordered at a Korean or Chinese shipyard, and I've got the I want the export credit agency to wrap that with a guarantee. That's a double credit. A triple credit is a typical Chinese lessor deal where you have typically it's a liner company. Very often it's a liner company with a ship at a Korean or Chinese yard with the support of an export credit agency, but it's also got a form of recourse to the Chinese lessor, which are often very strong entities, through a standby charter or a putback. Now these are much stronger deals than the old deals we were doing 10 years ago, and that's the type of business, because there's a lot of it available, or at least enough available for the capacity which we have available, this is the sort of business we're doing. We're doing some of the asset finance deals, but where we're doing those deals, we're doing them with lower leverage, higher prices, tougher terms and conditions, often shorter tenors, but we've strengthened those deals.
Great, thanks. Oliver, would you like to add on?
Well, if I can add and take the same question from a different viewpoint. I took a closer look at the Q1 figures provided by Dlogic. You know all Dlogic collecting the amounts of syndicated loans by club deals provided by the maritime industry, finance industry. And if you look at these Q1 figures, you would find three major topics. First, the amount of finance provided by the banks has almost halved compared to first quarter 2016. So we are back amount-wise, level-wise, we are back to a situation where we have been post-crisis in 2009, 2010 at those levels. Secondly, you will hardly find any of the traditional ship financiers in the league tables. So there's no DM Minor, there's no Nordea, none of the usual suspects, but there are these, what I would call the non-traditional banks and financial institutions, obviously having committed to this industry. And thirdly, when you then take a closer look at those figures, you will see that particularly some of the bigger transactions displayed there, they are not ship finance in a sense we talk about, but these are more sort of marine finances related to port logistics and so on. So my view currently is that the market has muted to a huge extent. Traditional banks are keeping their powder dry, waiting, whatever, doing different things. And I don't expect, I expect for the year a recovery, but we would not be able to reach last year's or the years before's levels this year anymore.
So I think those comments just indicate that contrary to there not being available any funding, it's just that we are seeing a shift away from what we would consider traditional asset finance. We as a law firm, do quite a lot of deals with the additional credit support, as Peter had mentioned. And perhaps I can also just direct, maybe have Christopher Conway from Citibank to talk about his area of specialization, export credit.
Yes, thanks, Valerie. I mean, I would just follow on from the two previous comments that the level of finance that has taken place in the first quarter of this year is the lowest that it's been in the last 12 years. And as was mentioned, that the availability of the financing that's been made available has been not directly for ship finance. And that's because there have been very, very few orders at the yards, particularly in, which would then require new building finance, whether it's export agency finance supported or otherwise. I think the reason for that is that portfolios in general have deteriorated over time through a combination of the imbalance that has been in place in various subsegments, such as the dry bulk, and to more latterly, LNG, that's less so today, and more latterly in the crude oil tanker space. And that imbalance has the capacity to change very quickly, but its impact on portfolios within banks has taken time to really be felt. Now, the negative impact, it gets felt through more severe or more adverse classification of portfolios. That leads to lower returns on portfolios, which in turn leads to greater senior level scrutiny. And therefore, with that greater scrutiny, you get restrictions on the additions to these portfolios for both credit portfolio quality concerns and return concerns. And that same concern is mirrored at the export agencies. The export agencies have, through the drop in oil prices, suffered significantly. They've also suffered in OSV sectors offshore and in dry bulk, and that in turn has led to immense scrutiny at, through the auditors and government regulators that has placed pressure on what the agencies can now do in the term of new finance. So their focus will always be on greater visibility of earnings. It will be on making sure that the structures that are put in place are more conservative, the advance rates are not so high, and for sure they're not going to want to do very much in the way of project finance. I think that, as has been said before, there's been a reduction in the number of clients that institutions focus on. I know that typically you know, there have been two approaches. One has been a pure asset finance approach, and the other has been a cash flow approach. We have never had an asset finance approach, and I think that the ability to do pure asset finance deals today is limited. So, you know, the short answer is that the reason that the amount of finance that's been made available in the early part of this year has been so low is because portfolios haven't recovered enough for there to be more optimism. And so it's this narrow focus on existing clients that are going to get the scarce capacity that's available.
Thank you. Perry, would you like to add on to that from ABN's perspective?
Yeah, I'll try to add on to a lot that has already been said. I agree that activity levels have been definitely reduced over the past 6 months. Which is, of course, obvious. There's much fewer new build activity, which I think we should all agree is a good thing for the market. Clients focusing on refinancing together with their banks. In all frankness, a lot of the deals last year where S&P was being done, although at very low levels, from a debt financing perspective, it was very difficult to make them work on the traditional asset financing levels. So asset levels low, but hardly any cash flow coming from the freight itself. So those deals have been done either with extra equity coming in from the owners. Private equity has still been quite active. And also quite a number of initiatives in second lien financing to make these deals happen. We take very much a client's focus. So indeed, structure will follow the client. Depending on whether you have long time charters with it, if it's new building with ECA, structures will follow. But in general, saying that there's less appetite from the commercial or the traditional ship finance banks is, I think, a bit exaggerated. But we have to be frank, it was a couple of very tough years, and some of the banks might indeed be re-evaluating how active they're going to be with their balance sheet, at least.
Yep, thank you. So, in summary, I think what we are looking at is basically hopefully just highlighting how things have changed somewhat. Criteria have been modified. We see that in terms of the number of transactions that get done. But as pointed out by Oliver, the amounts are actually still quite high. Just in relation to that, another form of, I think, participating in financings and ensuring the continuity of existing financings will be via the secondary market. Peter, you had some thoughts on those issues as well.
Well, I think that the secondary market, I mean, I think when banks are selling loan assets, generally they are not being sold at a premium, right? So that's my way of saying that they're generally sold at a discount. So this is not something that banks would intend to do at the time that they enter into a loan. So this is the way we see this is as a form of portfolio management. So banks who are maybe feeling that they are overcommitted in shipping or overcommitted to particular clients are looking to the secondary market to sell down loans, you know, often 4 or 5 years into a loan transaction, and they're going to do so at a discount. So they will take a hit on those sales. The reason they're doing so is a combination of pressure from internal pressure, sometimes government pressure, shareholder pressure where they're owned by government, and also regulatory pressure, and particularly some of the metrics which are being used, including RWA, where deals which are considered to be higher risk, maybe because the loan to value has increased or because the rating of the counterparty has reduced. These are bearing higher equity costs, and the banks are looking to reduce their overall equity cost on their portfolio. So we're seeing those sort of transactions. I think where it's interesting is because many banks are also picking up these loans. Obviously, you need a buyer as well as a seller. This secondary business is actually in competition with primary business. So if you have the same names in the market trying to raise primary, but their bankers from 4 or 5 years ago are trying to sell assets in secondary, and the yield is higher on the secondary assets, which would you choose?
That's a rhetorical question, I think. Perry, did you want to add, or is that in line with what you think?
No, I agree that there's quite a bit of activity in the secondary market. From our perspective, as I just said, we would definitely look at a client. So if there's deals in the market that would enhance our relationship, or it helps the client actually in taking over a credit from another financial institution that is taking more of a passive or an exit approach, we're more than happy to look at that. But more from a client and a relationship angle than from a credit trading perspective.
And so I think that gives us a flavor of what the international global shipping banks are facing, the things that they're looking at, the various options that are available to them when considering whether or not to provide financing for new financing. I'd just like to now bring the focus back to the Chinese market. A very quick question. In terms of your criteria, your lending criteria to borrowers which are based in China, is there a difference? Is there anything that you can identify as being unique to lending to such clients? If I could ask Tun Bing of DVB to give us his thoughts.
Yeah, sure. Good morning, everyone. And first of all, thanks CapitaLink for this invite to be able to come and share our views and our business. For DVB, we are one of the rare few German banks still in business, providing shipping finance to our clients. And particularly in China, I think this is our main market for Asia. We have about 1 billion exposure here in China, and this is growing. The experience has been quite positive. We have good relationship with a lot of the Chinese lessors, Chinese owners, be it on the private side or on the state-owned side. We don't see any difference between how we view Chinese borrowers or ship owners as compared to any other ship owners we finance or do business with. I mean, like any so-called market, if you want to do more in the market, you need to really have spend the time and resources and put in time to understand your market and the players. And to this, we have consistently do that for China. And our clients here are typically owners. They have, you know, they know their business. They have a good long-term view about the market. They could be tonnage providers with good employment on the vessels, or they could also be good operators with specializing in certain niche segments of the industry. In short, I don't think that there's any much difference. Of course, being able to speak the language, to understand the culture, this is a plus point, but I don't think that will be any difference if you view this borrower from the different region as well.
Yeah. Thanks, Dun Meng. And Perry, you have a similar approach in thinking behind that?
Yeah, I think it's very much in what Tung Beng said, is that there's no specific additional requirements for financing into the Chinese market. We're very much open for that market, and I think that the top tier names are very well serviced by the international banks. But definitely there's also a second layer of shipping companies, and if they, like any other market, have the right commercial strategy, a good track record, the right governance, and a sizable modern fleet to finance, then I think there will be good appetite from the international banks.
Sure.
So we have been following up and still follow up this market for more than 10 years now. What we particularly like is the situation that most of the leasing companies are subsidiaries of Chinese banks, so backed by these Chinese banks, which gives us a sort of strong mitigant in the overall package of a transaction. And although this is in the end a sort of financial institution style of obligor, we don't consider this as being a business which is allocated to financial institutions group. So this is still then within ship finance, but we particularly like this strong element. One thing is important for us, that within the overall structure, that there are also elements which don't go back to Chinese interests only. So my colleagues have figured out, for example, long-term charters. So we would like to see within a transaction long-term charters with others than Chinese counterparties. So this would be one of the key requirements from our credit.
Yeah, and I think this is something that Citibank can add on, because you're not a traditional shipping finance bank. You're looking at a lot more, aren't you?
Well, I'd like to think we are a traditional shipping finance bank, but I do think we've adapted to the changes in the marketplace, and the Chinese leasing companies for sure are here to stay. And I think they fill an important gap that's created by the reduced activity that Peter described earlier on in his opening comments. I think that while it is true, as both Peter and Oliver mentioned, that this is three-name paper, that's a benefit. But I think that we have decided that we will try to focus more on the underlying transaction, and where it's in support of existing clients, that makes it a lot more compelling for us to pursue these transactions. But I think that we would look at these as a three-name paper, as Peter articulated. For sure, you've got an obligation by a financial institution that is was backed by the ownership of a bank, and in turn, there are the CBRC regulations which govern the health of those companies. So those are strong mitigants in favor of embarking on this. But there is another feature here. I think that the transaction structures that are adopted by the Chinese leasing companies tend to be slightly different than the traditional structures that perhaps an export agency finance would provide, because there are consideration at an OECD level that suggests that there is you can't do a perfect matched funding. And that's actually okay, because I think that what the Chinese leasing companies should be thinking about is access to different forms of financing. And while they can go out and issue bonds, saying no to initial financing is perhaps not smart, because you don't know when the bond market's going to dry up. Export agency financing can be matched with the Chinese leasing companies for new built tonnage. And I think it provides a very interesting complement to existing forms of traditional finance.
So I've had the good fortune to walk the streets of Shanghai together with Tun Beng in my previous employment, and I think, you know, 10 years ago I was thinking that this market would be the next Greece. You know, I saw a lot of entrepreneurial companies coming out of China, sort of building up their own businesses. But actually, since then, you know, the shipping crisis came. Some of the promising looking companies basically quietened down, or some of them went out of business. And I find that we are also focusing on the Chinese leasing houses. Now, Chinese leasing houses, I find, extremely professional, entrepreneurial, well run businesses. And you know, that's a pleasure to work with. But I'm lacking that kind of entrepreneurial the privately owned companies, and I'm hoping that China will still spawn a shipping universe like Athens has.
Unless there was any other comments, given that we're holding this conference in Shanghai and in China, there are lots of local players as well in this market. I wonder if anybody has a question or anything that you would like to take the opportunity to ask our panelists. We have all five before us right now. Any questions? Okay, in that case, maybe I can just round up by asking, what would you like to see as happening in the near future to enable you to take advantage of the growth that is in China and that which is stimulated by China? Any suggestions or ideas on what would be good to have? Chris?
I could just take a shot at that. And really, this is in response to the last question that was asked about financing local companies. I would agree with the other panelists that there really shouldn't be any difference in the approach that's taken for Chinese companies than the approach taken for international companies. But what we desperately need is up-to-date information, transparency, and a good understanding of the underlying business model, because without that it becomes a guessing game. I think that understanding whether quasi-state-owned companies truly have full support of the government is another question that is difficult for international banks to understand without having local presence, which fortunately we have. But I think that this availability of good, reliable information is a very key feature in any decision-making process that banks in this industry sector would need.
I believe there's nothing to add, because this has proven to become standard in international ship finance, and I would assume without without guessing too much, that every one of us has burned his fingers already in his career on lack of transparency, lack of transparency, and insufficient information, yeah, to cover risks and to mitigate risks. So nothing to add from this. It's also nothing, I would say, very special, very particular, but this is a requirement, a precondition for receiving commitments.
Thank you. So I think that concludes our panel. We still have about 5 minutes, so please enjoy your coffee break and feel free to reach out to our panelists if you have any further questions. Thank you.